Yeah, the reality is there is a huge resource off the west coast of County Clare. There's almost continuous wind blowing through night and day throughout the Atlantic. And what I think we need now is the government to take a much more proactive approach to capturing that wind. It does require investment, and it does require providing commitments to large international companies to come and establish there. It does two things, in my view. It takes away the necessity to have wind turbines onshore, which is a huge bugbearer for communities. There are some already in place, and it's becoming more and more difficult to get communities to accept them. And I understand and accept that. And they shouldn't be asked to accept any more onshore wind farms when the resource is offshore. Then you couple that with the current situation where the price of coal and oil and gas has gone crazy since the invasion of Ukraine by Russia. It has distorted world fuel prices, and it's becoming effectively almost intolerable in terms of the cost of the generation of electricity. It's pushing up the cost of energy in the home, something really out of tune. And that's probably going to continue for the years ahead. So you have all this wind, you have all this wind energy that can be converted into electricity. And I'm just saying Ireland needs to be at the forefront of capturing it. There is such a resource out there. It will more than cover what Ireland will need from an electric point of view, and we can be exporting it through various different interconnectors into the European grid. So there's real potential. The third benefit, if we can get ahead of other countries, we can develop the technologies, particularly the floating platforms, which are only in sort of development stage. But if Ireland and West Clare could become synonymous with the development of those floating pontoons, we could have people gainfully employed in West Clare making these floating platforms and exporting them to other parts of the world that have significant wind resources. So you'd have the benefit of generating clean electricity, you'd reduce the necessity for onshore wind turbines, you'd address the cost of electricity to the consumer, and you'd have the potential to create significant jobs in West Clare for many years into the future in producing the equipment that would be used in the floating pontoons that when you had the wind farms out there fully built, you could export the technologies elsewhere.
That would obviously require, as you mentioned there, a significant initial outlay. I mean, this is at a time when a cost of borrowing money is due to increase as well, and the government are, for other reasons that we know of that I want to get on in a minute, looking at the purse strings as well. So while I suppose people might appreciate the merits of such an investment, it wouldn't be an insignificant one.
No, it'll be significant, but you're investing in future. You're investing in reducing the cost of energy. You're investing in the future of job creation. You're investing in a sustainable reduction of the use of carbon in the generation of electricity. Three fundamental building blocks of our future economy. It's not just the money. It requires the government effectively designating the zone in that area, effectively saying that Ireland wants to be or has an ambition to be at the forefront of the development of floating offshore wind, and in doing so then sets us apart from other countries, gives us that competitive advantage, gives us the advantage of being first starter. And you know, we've seen this throughout the world. Countries that are at the cutting edge of the development of any new technologies, they benefit for the long term. You look at all the wind turbines that come to Ireland from Germany, because Siemens were the company that developed the technology, and they ship it around the world. And Ireland, and West Clare in particular, can it be exactly that hub of development for the floating platforms onto which the turbines sit. There's significant research and development that needs to go into that. There's significant engineering works that need to go into it. We can develop that in West Clare. We have the deep ports. We have skilled engineers in Ireland. We have people chomping at the bit. It needs a drive by government, a whole of government approach. And look, I and others are continuing to pursue that to try and make it a reality.
Well, everyone's aware, of course, of what's planned for Money Point. But just on that project itself, people will also be aware of Equinor's decision to pull out of the Irish market last year, and obviously there was enhanced legislation promised, you know, that was already being worked on before that, but it was sort of being fast-tracked after it. I suppose, is there maybe further clarity now on where we're at in terms of finding a replacement for Equinor needed? I know the ESB have said the timelines for the project, etc., won't be impacted, but I suppose if you are looking for this whole of government approach, then surely such a significant project off the west coast of Clare needs a bit of clarity at the moment.
Yeah, I fully agree. I mean, what happened with Equinor was that they were committing a significant amount of their monies to the ESB project as a joint partner. And with the, what I might call the fairly slow approach being taken by the government and by the ESB, suggesting that, oh, we'll be looking at this for 2029, 2030 and beyond, Equinor, quite frankly, said, well, we're not going to leave that money sitting there waiting for Ireland to get its act together. And they invested, they pulled out of the Irish project and they invested the money in Asia, where they found a project that was ready to go right away. And you know, from an investment point of view, if somebody has £100 to invest today because they want to make a return on that investment, they don't want to hear, well, the project will be ready to invest in 7 or 8 or 9 years' time.
But in terms of finding another investor...
There's no problem finding investors.
Yeah.
The issue is the project needs to start much sooner. So if there was a project, if the project was brought forward and the ESB and the government said, we want this to begin in 2025, you'd have a flood of investors who want to invest in it because they recognise the huge potential. But it's the delays that are associated with not having it come to fruition until 2029 or 2030 or beyond. So it's about changing our ambition. And to me, the thing that has driven the change is the massive increase in the price of oil and coal and gas as a result of the war in Ukraine. So that has changed the dynamic. And, you know, from that point of view, the government need to have a change in its ambition. And the ambition has to be, how do you bring this project, ashore a lot sooner? So set your targets, 2025, 2026. How feasible is that to begin the project, rather than leaving adrift 8-9 years hence? And that's really where we need to get it. Money will not be an issue. And private monies are being invested in these projects all over the world. And we've seen that even in the onshore wind area. And when you look at the price comparison now with the cost of generating electricity from oil and gas and coal, it has spiraled out of control. So it makes it a hell of a lot more comparable. Even though the cost of capturing wind offshore is expensive by capturing it onshore, it starts to make sense now because of the rising cost of fuel.
Can I just ask you lastly, just on that very note, of course, it's very much hitting people in the pockets, not just when it comes to fuel, when it comes to food and all sorts of other rising prices. And the government set to tonight propose a counter motion to Sinn Féin's call for an emergency budget on the cost of living. Is it sort of madness, really, Senator Dooley, that people are being asked to wait until October now?
I think you can't have a budget every day of the week. You've got to set out a longer-term strategy. I do think, though, that the government needs to intervene in a number of areas. It doesn't have to do it across the board. I don't think there's need for necessarily a mini-budget, but I think there's need for intervention. I think in relation to the cost of fuel, particularly those people who are on very low incomes and need to drive to work where there isn't public transport, I think they need some support. I think, and I raised this issue last week.
Would that be cutting duties? Would that be, cash in
the pocket? Cutting duties. It could be where their employer would give them a relief of tax on some payment towards their fuel. There are different ways where you can target the lower income people. I look to the family carers who care in the various homes around the country.
Yes.
Who work for, I raised it last week, who work for the HSE or work for some of the private operators, and they're driving up to 200 kilometres a day, visiting houses, helping people to remain in their homes. They're on very low mileage. They're on low enough wages anyway. I've met with many of these. They're finding it impossible to do their job at the minute and keep a car on the road with the doubling in the cost of fuel. So, you know, it's not about having a budget to resolve the issues for everyone. Some people are in a position because they're reasonably well paid, they're able to sustain the increase in charges. But there's another cohort of people out there who it's just putting them completely over the edge. Now, the only thing that's, I suppose, and you looking out today and looking at the weather, you'd be forgiven for believing that it's summer. But you know, people don't spend a lot on home fuel during the summer, except where there's somebody ill in the house and there's costs associated with that. But there are ways of targeting people who are on very low incomes and who are dependent on social welfare, and I think that needs to be looked at before October, quite frankly, and I've made my views known to the Minister for Public Expenditure on that. And then in October, the government have to come forward with a very comprehensive programme to address the significant increase in costs of fuel, in costs of food, in cost of home heating, and the cost of electricity. And, you know, we used to have the average social welfare increase of a fiver or whatever. That won't be enough on this occasion.
What should it really be?
I don't know. You have to work that out. But I certainly think it'll have to be closer to 15 or 20 euros, quite frankly. But it will depend on the significant increases in the cost of living. And economists will work out that number based on, you know, how much food has gone up and fuel has gone up and all of that. We have to be working towards a living wage or a living payment for those that are on social welfare, because it's not good enough to say, well, you know, we just raise the social welfare by a fiver a year, when actually the cost of living for people is gone up by 10 euros a week or 20 euros a week. And I think we got to be more connected in terms of the payments and the tax structure. And that's difficult. And those that are on better incomes will probably have to carry a greater burden for a while. And that's the way a socially just society should work it through. The important thing is to look out for the people who can least afford it, who've least well off, and those that are in the squeezed middle, those that are working, paying for everything and unable to make ends meet, unable to pay their college education for the kids, unable to pay their childcare costs. All of these things have to be looked at, and I think that needs to be done in a comprehensive way as part of the budget.